Hello and welcome to another episode of the Selfish Podcast. Today we have Wendy Stroderick, who I'm really excited to connect with and find out more about her. We actually met through a Tony Robbins group, but more in depth is she connected with Danielle and Danielle's story, and they've spoken. I'm just really intrigued to get to know her and hear more about her life. So welcome, Wendy. Can you just share with myself and the audience where in the world you are?
Yep, I'm in Essex in the UK at the moment, not about 25 miles from the centre of London, I suppose.
Oh, nice.
Not far from Southend-on-Sea, which is a lovely location.
Yeah, I've actually been to Southend a couple of times in my childhood. And
yeah.
It's a really nice place. Yes.
Yeah.
Very different. Yeah.
It is, yeah. It's sort of London's playground.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's because of where I was near the south. It's like people from London seem to either go down towards Brighton or they go to Southend. But Southend being, I think, even more popular for Londoners.
Yeah, for north of the river, you go to Southend. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, Wendy, I'd like to get to know my guests in a more personal way. And I think there's no better place to start than the earlier life. So can you paint me a picture of what was life like for you pre-10 years old?
Oh, before I was 10 years old. I lived in the Midlands and in right out in the country. I think the first house I remember living in was a sort of mile from the next door neighbours. It was a market garden. Lived a completely self-contained, self-sufficient rural life. Sort of had pigs and cows and 25 acres of corn, and it was lovely.
Oh, nice. That sounds beautiful.
Totally enjoyed it. Then when I was about five, we moved into the village because the family had expanded. And we moved in with my grandfather because he had a bigger house. We had less acreage, but still ran the market garden. And, I had my own pony and did all the rural things. So I had an ideal childhood.
Nice. What was school life like back then?
I hated it. It's like putting a bird in the cage. I don't think I'd wore shoes until I went to school at five, because I just lived completely outdoors. Just lived with the animals and the farm. I used to know the local farm workers. So I just used to go off and go across country to the next door farm. And I mean, this is before I was five, and just meet up with there's one guy called Harry Hickman. I remember him well, and he was a hedger and ditcher, and I just used to spend all day with him, and he taught me all about, you know, the birds nesting and all the wildflowers and all the little insects. And of course, when I went to school, you got a book out and had to learn from a book all about birds and birds' nests. And I thought, what a waste of time this is.
No, yeah. Very
so I was quite wild, I suppose, really.
Yeah, very different. And just so I get an idea for myself, because it's different generations of schooling. Like, how big was your school in terms of, like, how many people in a class?
I think there was 40 people in the school, 40 kids in the little village school. No, it's split into two classes, but I'm actually dyslexic, but of course I wasn't recognised at the time. So although people knew I was bright, I couldn't do the work, so they thought I was lazy and difficult, which also didn't help, you know, plus the wildness. And so I was considered a bit of a rebel. But I actually passed the 11 plus. People outside the UK probably won't know about it, but at 11, everyone at my age used to take the entrance exam for grammar schools. And the year I took it, it was just a straightforward intelligence test. No written questions, no essays to write, anything like that. And being an intelligence test, you know, just spotting odd things out in sequences, and I just sail through, you know, no problem at all. So I ended up at an academic grammar school, not being able to read and write. So again, they just thought I was difficult and lazy, not doing the work. But I discovered the art department, so I was okay after that.
Yeah, no, I think I was told that and I think just from talking to people and things, I have had dyslexia or have it, like, and I remember in school really struggling, just like, I was good at maths. Maths wasn't a problem. For some reason I could do numbers. But when it came to words, I could never spell. Spelling was horrendous.
Reading was horrendous.
And I'd lose interest really quickly because I couldn't read. I couldn't keep focus. So I'd get bored. I would skip ahead. I would get distracted. I'd start doodling, you know. And then when it came to learning languages, that was something else. I was even put outside the class for a while because the teacher just said to me, like, basically you're hopeless and you'll distract the other kids. So you just sit outside and do what you want, but there's no point you even participating, which I kind of like, because I went outside and then I walked off and come back at the end of the lesson. I just went and walked around the school some of the time.
Yeah.
But I just couldn't. And to this day, I read signs. It's backwards. It's different letters, but I find it quite amusing now rather than distracting. I don't feel like it's a limitation. It's just what it is, but it makes, in some way, I think it gives heightened sense of creativity because you start to break down words into different ways and you want to know what the meaning of the word is rather than just the sound and the spelling.
And you find different ways to cope as well, don't you? I mean, when I see a problem now, I can always see 10 different ways to solve it straight off.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, doesn't help focus. I know it means I'm a bit scattered and it doesn't help me communicate with people who can only see one solution to a problem, you know, and they've got very fixed minds.
Yeah.
I do rub against those sort of people a bit.
Yeah. Do you remember your earliest, like, or first, like, ambition or dream or something? Just like, when I'm older, I want to do this or be this or become this?
I just wanted to be as I was, to tell you the truth. I mean, when I was very, very little, I thought that would be my life, you know, just working on the land and growing stuff, and I just thought. But then as I got a bit older, I discovered my love of art, and I discovered there was people such as shoe designers, and I thought that was incredible. So I thought, right, that's what I want to be, a shoe designer. And that's what I was.
Oh, nice.
I worked in London in the 1970s as a shoe designer, which was pretty awesome.
Yeah, and I bet a very different life from a country life.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And then I moved abroad with my husband for a time. We lived in Germany and Holland. And my other great love has always been horses. So I decided one time I wanted to be a riding instructor. So I took the BHS qualifications and became a riding instructor for a time. And that was awesome. And then things happened. I got divorced and I was running a little riding school with five horses. And we had, I think it was 1987, a terrible winter. 3 weeks completely snowed up where we were, five horses eating their heads off. So I had to disband that. And I thought, well, what on earth can I do now? And I thought, well, I'll do gardening. So I started doing gardening within five years, I was designing gardens and I'd got three teams, totaling about 15 people working for me, designing and constructing gardens. So it's just absolutely gone with the flow, you know?
Yeah, it sounds nice. And like you said, you still got that, seems you sort of combined your skills along the way. So you went to design, then brought back in the sort of the nature side as well with the gardens. What kind of gardens would you design? Is this for like...
It's a small domestic
garden. I was going to say domestic.
Yeah, small domestic garden. Well, yeah, from sort of tiny front gardens, I think the biggest we did was 5 acres. But I think once you know the principles of design, because I went to art college before the shoe design, so I think once you know the principle of design, you can apply it anywhere.
Nice. And what did you find? What comes to mind first when you had some sort of struggle in your life? Like it could be early life, later life.
Oh, my life crashed when I was about 50 years old. My life totally crashed around me. I was divorced, house sold, business closed, and I couldn't walk. I twisted my spine. Apparently, I've got scoliosis of the spine anyway. And I'd got early onset arthritis and I completely put my back out, you know, laying paving slabs, landscaping. And it gradually got worse and worse until I had to close the business and then I had to sell the house. And yeah, so it was a pretty low point.
And did you find in that time, was there anything that brought you some sort of balance in your struggles?
Well, I mean, I was on my back, I think, for about a fortnight, absolutely not being able to walk. And I did all sorts of research. I tell you, thinking back, I mean, the lowest ever point was when I realised my husband wasn't coming back. That was about 4 years before this complete crash. And I realised he was someone else. It's taken a little while. I mean, we didn't have a row or anything, but he gradually got more and more distant. And one night I realised he just wasn't going to come back, and that was it. And that was the absolute lowest point I've ever been in my life. And I sort of prayed for comfort. I prayed to be able to go to sleep. You know, it's about 3 o'clock in the morning. And I was praying really hard. And I felt then as if strong arms were being wrapped around me. And I felt so comforted, and I fell asleep. And in the morning, I woke with the most amazing sense of gratitude that I had my life before me. And I mean, going from not wanting to live, not knowing how I was going to live, you know, how I was going to pay the mortgage, how I was going to manage day to day, I went from that state to being so grateful for the life that I had. So going back 4 years forward again, when I couldn't walk, because you know, life happens. Now I forgot all about this gratitude thing, but when I couldn't walk, when I was completely paralysed, I thought back. I thought, well, it carried me on wings then, you know. Could it do the same for me now? So it was a gift then, but I thought, can I apply gratitude in every aspect of my life now and see if it'll have the same effect? So that's what I did. And I just was grateful for absolutely everything in my life, every second, every moment. And it made such a difference. And I did lots of research. I did, you know, I did the Tony Robbins and the Jack Canfield and Wayne Dyer, Louise Hay, listening to all the affirmations, and they all teach gratitude. You know, that is the fundamental feeling. It's the vibration that you should, I won't say should, because this should is a word you shouldn't use, but it's a vibration that when you feel it all through your body, it's miraculous. It sort of cures everything. So yeah. That's basically within, it took me about 5 years before I could run. Gradually, I could get out of bed and I could walk. My ambition was to run down a beach. That was my ambition. It took me about 5 years to do that.
Oh, nice. Well, congratulations for getting there.
Thank you. Yeah.
It's always lovely to hear stories like that. And I'm always fascinated that, like, 5 years seems like a short time, but in during that time, it can feel like it's really long. But what sort of happened to the body over maybe 10 years or 20 years and all built up, it can be undone in a short time compared to the amount of time it took to damage it. But in that time, it can feel like it's a long time. But no, congratulations for getting to that point and being able to run down the beach. And I was also interested when you're saying about, you said when you go through, say, heartbreak and loss of a loved one in that way, because although very different to yours, I was a lot younger. But I remember when I lost my first love and we broke up and we was married, we got divorced and we was together for 10 years. But although I'd already experienced so much suffering in my life and pain, it was a very different feeling. And I think when I look back on it, I think the feeling was actually a loss of future that you had with that person rather than almost them, the person. It was like they was always in my vision of the future. Everything that I had planned and thought about I ever wanted to do, they was always there. And now when that was gone, the whole image and the whole vision was just a blur. So it was almost like there is no future. And you're saying, like, just don't know what you're going to do. You feel lost. And I couldn't sleep or couldn't eat. And so many things happened in that time that I thought I was strong enough to even, in the back of my mind, if that ever happened, I would handle it. Do you know what I mean? It's like, that wouldn't change.
Yeah,
me. Then it happened and I was like, I can't handle this.
Yeah, yeah. It's like losing the ground from underneath you, isn't it?
Yeah, and that was an extraordinary feeling. And the same when you're saying about gratitude, it took me, it wasn't instant, you know, but it took me years to get to the point where I was like, I'm so thankful for that moment. You know, I appreciate it. You know, that taught me a lesson. That wasn't my heart breaking, but breaking open. So be able to feel, to be able to appreciate, to, and like you said, putting yourself back into that gratitude. And it's really hard when you're in a terrible situation, when you hear someone say, be grateful for it.
Oh, it's the last thing you want to hear, isn't it?
It's the last thing you want to hear. What I try and explain to people that I work with it through like mental health aspects and different things, it's like, it's just a perception shift. It's like, you can choose, you've got free will to choose whether you want to be grateful for something or not grateful, but one's going to make you more productive and feel better and one's not. So why not just try it and choose it? You know, and it's almost, that's why I call it the selfish podcast. You've got to be a bit selfish and you're doing it for you.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And it's great that you got that, and that was such a growth in your life. You know?
And I learned about it so much from Tony Robbins as well, because I mean, he famously says, you can't feel two emotions at the same time. So if you're feeling gratitude, you can't feel fear. If you're feeling gratitude, you can't feel jealousy. So if you can choose to feel gratitude, can't you? And then it cancels out these other emotions.
Yeah. And I find as well, there's so many aspects that we can try and find different ways of gratitude. Could you give for the audience, like, what would be for someone that's, say, in a real beginner stage where they're like, they're not even sure if they felt gratitude? What would you recommend someone as a starting step?
Well, I mean, I've got a whole program on it, and it's all up for free if anyone wants to have a look. It's a 28-day, 10 minutes a day mini course on gratitude. Well, not mini, it's quite a big course, but just 10 minutes a day, 28 days, all for free at the moment. And the first day I call it my 9-part abundance chart. You take a piece of paper, you divide it into 9, you get 9 subheadings, different aspects of your life. I think mine was people, one was water, one was power, shelter, food. I can't remember the others, but there's 9. You choose your own 9 different parts of your life. And then you list all the people. So you only put people in the heading, all the people that support you. So you don't just think about your parents or your aunt or your landlord. You think about every single person that supports you. So say you're probably holding a mobile phone in your hand at the moment. You have people listening on the podcast. Think how many people it took to get this mobile device to you. Go right back to the miners who mined the raw materials that went into it. Then the engineers, the designers, the richest men in the world conspired to get this device into your hands. And you think just the drivers who delivered it to you, whether it was assembled in the factories or the factory workers, the bankers or the merchants that handle the money that made it so that you could transfer money, but a click of a button, you probably just sent the money over and the device is on its way to you. So if you really concentrate on all the people that are supporting you at this very moment, think of the house that you're living in, you've got all the services coming in. There's lots of people behind all those services getting those into your house. So when you go through all these 9 subheadings, I guarantee you'll have a shift of thought at the end of it.
I really love that. And especially when you're breaking it down and going through the full journey, because I know maybe someone might be listening and it could have been myself years ago. And I'd be like, oh, I haven't got other people supporting me.
Yeah.
No, but your mind goes straight to, like you said, what you don't have rather than what you do. But at the same time, I might have been, if you're listening to a podcast, if you've got technology, someone had to create that. So that's supporting you in this moment. You're probably wearing some form of clothing, you know, and someone had to make that. It had to be produced. And there's so many stages of something that's within your life already that has been touched by other hands, only for you to have it, you know? So I really like that you're looking around your actual environment at what you have and how many people that involved and seeing and feeling that they done that to support you in your moment wherever you are. So I think that's beautiful.
And
for me, I started with a lot of my gratitude practice actually started from appreciating and being grateful for my body, because I spent a lot of time pushing myself to care for others and beating my body up. And when I was younger, quite literally, I'd literally hit myself because I thought I wasn't good enough, and I was trying to toughen myself up, and I'd be annoyed at my physical body for being tired, for being run down, for not being good enough, for not looking the right way, for being fat. You know, it'd be like, you're not good enough. You got to do better. And I'd get really self-abusive about it, mentally and physically. And it took one day to really realize and just go, do you know what? This body's been here for me every day of my life. It's done its absolute best to do its best possible job it can. And if it didn't do what you wanted, that's still good enough, because it's absolutely trying to support you, to encourage you, and to be there for you. So for me, it was like just bringing it back to even myself and being grateful for my actual body. And whether that's grateful for my hands to be able to move them, my legs to be able to walk them. You know, and similar to you with Danielle's story, which a lot of the listeners would have heard, when she couldn't walk again. Like, that just made me appreciate it. It's like, I can focus on how terrible it is for her and the suffering she is going through, but I can also switch to gratitude for the fact that I can walk. Oh, my legs are strong enough to carry her to the bathroom rather than the opposite. You know, so it's like, and that makes you more productive. It makes you feel better. So no, I love that. I love your...
It's such a shift, isn't it? Such a shift. And it goes into every cell in your body, doesn't it? It's not just in your mind. I call it the gratitude attitude treasure hunt. The first day is all about abundance. The second day is all about your body. And there's a little thing for you to fill out, and you put all the different parts of the body that you most appreciate. But it's... Yeah, it's not just in your brain, gratitude. One of the things I teach is breathing in gratitude as well. You breathe it, you breathe into your diaphragm, you breathe into your ribs, and you breathe into your heart. And you think of gratitude like oxygen, and you breathe it in, so it goes out right down to your toes, right down to your fingertips, into every cell of your body, every organ in your body. And it's a different vibration. Apparently it's a similar vibration to love, isn't it? Gratitude and love are very similar, and it's healing. It can heal at a cellular level.
Yeah, I think again, if you were to imagine a person coming into the room with you, and you had one person who's full of love and gratitude, and one person who's full of anger, frustration, and blame, who would you want around your company 24/7? If you're locked up together in a prison, which one would you want as your cellmate?
Yeah,
you know, so it's which one do you want as yourself? Because you're surrounded by yourself in all moments. So to be full of that gratitude, to be full of love, makes life a lot more pleasant for yourself.
Yeah.
And others. Yeah. A byproduct is other people like it too.
Yeah, and it is so healing. I'm sure that's. I mean, I had x-rays and everything, and I was told that what I had was incurable, you know, just get ready for a wheelchair. But it is just so healing, and it's free, you know. It's that's the amazing thing about it. I mean, obviously I went to chiropractors and osteopaths and physiotherapists and things, but it was the gratitude that healed me. I had x-rays that showed my spine was twisted. It was twisted one way and rotated, and it is virtually straight now. And nice. I was told it wasn't operable because there'd be a 50-50 chance of me being permanently paralyzed because of the way it was twisted. But just thinking thoughts of gratitude can straighten a twisted spine and halt arthritis. And a diet's got a lot to do with it, and exercise as well.
Yeah, like I said, it's in a holistic approach.
There's
multiple areas that need to be addressed rather than just one.
If you've not got this gratitude, this fundamental feeling, that fundamental vibration, you're hitting resistance all the time. I think it just makes everything flow.
Yeah, it's what's interesting is when I work sometimes one-to-one with people where we have to realign their spine. And like you said, it's a physical adjustment. But what I've noticed from other practitioners that I've been to, that some of them, they will just adjust you and off you go back to whatever you're doing. There's no talk of gratitude. There's no talk of anything other than, oh, you need a click here. This needs to be moved. And then you're off. Whereas for me, it's like, right, in that moment, I have to be in a state of gratitude.
Absolutely, yeah.
This is a sacred practice for me. So it's like I've got to be in a certain intention. But I also tell every person before we start, I'm like, as soon as you finish this, I said, you're going to go for a walk. And I said, and when you walk, you're going to walk for a minimum of 20 minutes. And I said, I only want you to be in as much as you can a state of gratitude and appreciation. I want you to smile a little bit, to walk with your chest up, and just be happy for the relief that you've got right then and how grateful you are that you was able to serve yourself in this moment. And I said, and if you see a person, how grateful you are to be able to just look at another person, anything you can to keep you in that gratitude. Because I've noticed from working for many years with people that if they don't have that, they need to keep coming back. Their spine just goes back into the position it was.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't hold its position. And you end up like, oh, only feel good for an hour after a chiropractor, an osteopath. Or it lasts for a day, I've got to go back. Or I go every week now. And it's like, no, you want to address the problem. So you shouldn't need to go every week or multiple times every, you know, it should be increasing in your health. So you have that freedom again.
Yeah. That's amazing, because I found a lady about 10 miles away. She's a cranium osteopath, I think she calls herself. But I literally lie on her couch, and she sort of, she doesn't do any manipulation or anything. She just makes sure I'm sitting straight, and she holds my head in her hands for about 10 minutes, and that's about it. And I went for months to a chiropractor who manipulated my spine. And as you say, I'd get off the table, I could walk fine, get back in the car, get out of the car at home, and it all gone back again. And I was going week after week. But this lady, I think I went 5 times, and it's just energy healing. I mean, you'd think it's woo-woo, you know, think it's really out there, but it works. And sometimes she'll be at my foot end, she'll just hold my feet. Other times she'll hold my head, and that's all she does. And, you know, I'm walking again.
Yeah, no, wonderful. I trained with a lady who does cranial sacral therapy, and she also works with horses, which is really interesting. She taught me a lot to work with horses and work on animals as well. But part of her practice, she'll show me, and some of it is just holding. Some of it, like, I understand on the biology level and the physical level of that, where your hands are placed on, say, the occiput and the spine and how that's taking pressure off and open it, but also your intention and the vibration, the energy, whatever that presence is that you're holding is interacting with theirs.
Yeah,
getting the environment matters, the smell in the air matters.
Every single
thing is being interpreted by our central nervous system in that moment, you know, and you're trying to actually realign, rebalance and harmonize that person.
Yeah.
But like I say, and just the subtlest thing, and sometimes no one's ever held someone for many, many years for more than 10 seconds. You know, we hug these days and it's hello. And
yeah.
That's it. You know, and it's like, if you hug and you hold someone, normally a partner or a loved one, like, and you hold them for more than like 30 seconds, that's quite rare, you know, to just hold them and embrace them. Some people do it with animals. That's why I think pets are so popular these days.
Yeah.
Because they're not getting it from people, you know, and then that's the first time they felt another life force that's just wanting to physically touch them and not run away. And I think that's missing for a lot of people. And I think, like you said, just even having your head held, even just the touch is making such a huge impact.
Oh, it certainly made a huge impact on me.
So what do you do? Like you said, that was like impacted you around 50 years old. It took 5 years for you to be able to run. Now, I don't know if you want to share.
I'm 74 now.
74. Yeah, I was gonna say, I don't know if you want to share your age. I think age is something we should celebrate as we get older, you know.
Well, because I think you do, it's a bit like kids, you know. Kids say, oh, I'm 6 this year, I'm 6 and a half. I think when you get old, you start to say, oh, I'm 74 this year, 74 and a half.
Yeah, and so it would have been what, about 55 when you run on the beach?
So from
say then to where you are now, how often are you, say, seeing a different service like the cranial person or a chiropractor?
I very rarely now. If I really want to treat myself, I'll go and see it. I don't really need it now. I still go jogging. I try and walk every day, jog now and again. I'm learning how to dance a jive with a little app on my iPad. I like flying a stunt kite, although I'm not very good at it. And until recently, the grandchildren had ponies and things, so I was running around with them with the ponies. And I still garden a lot. I still do a lot of gardening.
Oh, nice.
Growing my own vegetables.
Nice. I was just actually thinking about that when you said, because obviously what we consume makes a difference to our life, you know, and even what we consume media-wise. Like you said, you're consuming all them people you mentioned earlier, the Tony Robbins, the Jack Canfield. That's consumption as well. Like yeah. I see it as that's encouraging consumption, which I think also people are missing a lot of. It's good to surround yourself with encouraging content or content that empowers
absolutely.
You.
Absolutely essential, yeah.
Yeah, and for me, it's like after you've watched or listened to something, to just take a moment afterwards to go, do I feel bigger or do I feel smaller? And that's changing, like I said, it changes your posture, it changes your central nervous system, but it's impacting you in some way.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, well, so your diet and your food, did that change drastically as well when you was 55?
Yeah.
And is it the same now?
I keep tweaking it. I thought I always ate healthy. I always ate very little meat and I always ate a lot of vegetables and salads and things. But when I couldn't walk, the first thing I looked at was the diet, and I cut out gluten, cut out all wheat. And in a couple of days, I could actually walk again just by cutting out wheat, which was pretty incredible. When I say walk, I could sort of shuffle sideways, you know, but I could get out of bed and get to the loop. And I've gradually refined the diet over time. I find that any animal protein causes inflation, so I try and be vegan as much as possible. It doesn't always work, because when I cook nice meals for the kids and they leave things, you know, I think, do I just nibble this or do I put it in the bin, you know, but I don't really intend to eat animal protein. And fish I find worse than anything. Fish is incredibly inflammatory. I mean, everybody says that's impossible. You know, you look at all the glycemic indexes and things like that. Fish doesn't cause inflammation. Well, it does in me. So I think we've all got to know ourselves, haven't we?
Yeah.
But so I cut out all animal protein, absolutely any animal products completely. And I live on fruit. I found I was eating too much fruit and I was getting eczema. So I gradually got the sugar content down. And I try and do sugar-free now, but I still struggle. I know you do sugar-free, don't you? I still find it difficult to do 100% sugar-free. I still eat the odd biscuit or cookie for your American audience.
Yeah, for me personally, it's grain-free. I'm not carbohydrate free, but I eat very little foods that have carbohydrates in them anyway, because I don't eat a lot of fruit and I don't eat grains and I don't eat potatoes. So once you don't eat them things, you sort of lose nearly every carbohydrate there is.
By
nature. But the only time I get a bit of actual sugar, like sugar cane, is in really dark chocolate, you know, because you can't.
Yeah.
I've tried just having cocoa with without the sugar, and it's just not the same, to say the least. And I don't touch any sweeteners. I don't like synthetic sweeteners. There's a few other sugar alternatives out there, but I don't see them being really much better than regular sugar, because they seem to still have the same impact on the body. So for me, it's just avoiding it sometimes, but I also try and work with, I'm not trying to add more pressure to life, because life has pressure all the time.
Yeah.
Sometimes going overboard on our diet is a pressure, even though we're taking away food that we'd say is not good for us. The pressure of doing so can be more harmful than actually the food you consume. Because like I say, it's a struggle. And that's how I used to be when I was younger. I was like really militant. It's like, right, this is the diet. This is how I'm going to eat. And I won't break no matter what. Even if the food, I'm like, this is what I need to eat. I'm going to force it in, even though it tastes disgusting. You know, and it'd be discomfort and I'd be dreading eating the meal, thinking about it, you know, and you put yourself, but I wasn't realizing the impact of that, because I was just concerned with the nutrition, the nutrients, what it was, you know, and
it's got to be psychologically nutritional as well, hasn't it? You've got to enjoy it.
Yeah, and for me as well, it's no animal products. And I think with fish, I found when I was transitioning, like I thought, fish, salmon, I thought is like a clean fish. The further away it is from, say, having a system like ours, I thought the better it would be to digest, because we're not emotionally digesting it. But I couldn't find fresh, unfarmed fish. It was like everything I was finding was farmed as well.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, that's not growing up free, and it's not going to be as clean and had the right food. So I said to myself, when I come off meat, I was like, I can only eat meat once I can hunt a wild free animal. I was like, if it's free, it's running through the wild, it's had a completely free life, I will as quickly as possible end that life so I can then consume it. And then in England, that wasn't so easy. And I wasn't in a place, like you said, near a city and stuff. It's like,
it's not really legal, is it?
I'm not going to hunt a pigeon or a rat. You know, it's not so appetizing to eat an animal out of a city. So I just didn't have any meat. Then when I came to Spain and I see animals that I could hunt, there was no instinct within me to want to hunt them. You know, and my health, my mood, my emotions, my physical body, everything had been improving. So apart from taste, I didn't have, it's like, well, I used to like the taste of meat. But apart from that, I didn't see any real reason to do so. But when I see an animal now, it's like not one part of me wants to harm it. I just love seeing them.
Yeah. I'd have to be very hungry, I think, to kill an animal and eat it. I think I'd have to have starving children. I think I would eke out an existence somehow without doing it for myself. But I think if push came to shove, if I had starving children, I could kill an animal, but not any other way.
Yeah, and like you said, you've already got the skills of growing and planting and things. It's like,
I've got the skills of killing and, you know, preparing animals, because I did it on the market garden. But I would not do it out of choice.
Yeah.
There's so many things we can grow in the gardens, isn't there?
Yeah. And I've seen so many inventive ways online as well of how people are growing things on balconies and like towers. And
you know,
there's so many different ways, depending. You don't have to have a giant piece of land to be able.
No, I've only got ever such a small plot. It's only, I can't remember, 9 meters by 5, something like that. It's very small.
So how did you find the last 2 years in your life, like internally, externally? And it's been a bit chaotic for everyone in some way. It sounds like you was in a stronger position with everything that you went through, but I'm interested, like, what did that bring up and how was it?
Yeah, for a start, I absolutely panicked, because in the UK, for a start, it was, for the first 3 weeks, it was just going to be elderly people, which was a bracket that I was in, you know, because I was over 70, and everybody else was, you know, carrying on as normal. For 3 weeks, how on earth am I going to stay in for 3 weeks? And then everybody got locked down, didn't they? And then it went on for nearly 2 years. But I was still designing gardens at that time, and I got mobbed with work because everybody was in their gardens, weren't they? They all wanted help in their gardens. So I got too much work. I had to turn it down in the end. I thought everybody else was at home, you know, on furlough, doing nothing. And here was me, absolutely mobbed with work. So I stopped taking on anymore. And then at the end, I decided to retire. By the end of the 2 years lockdown, I decided to stop doing the garden. I help a few old clients doing bits that I really like. I love clipping topiary. So I've got a couple of gardens where I still go in and clip their topiary hedges.
What's topiary?
Topiary, it's box hedging. You see it in stately homes and
the really thick
not hedges. Gardens, and they're fancy. They're cones. You can cut them into different shapes.
Okay, yeah.
Cones and balls and fancy hedges.
So you get to bring in a little bit more of an art element into your.
Yeah, but the ones I sort of designed, one in particular I designed and put in about 10 years ago, but it just needs a yearly trim. So I enjoy going back and doing that every year.
Yeah, it's nice. And I imagine you get to, again, be more grateful for them ones where you're not forced to do it because you have to, you're choosing.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
That's one of the advantages of getting old. You only do what you choose to do. Well, I do anyway.
Yeah. And how did you find, again, because you'd already been practicing your gratitude and working with that and seeing the difference in your life, how quick was you to get to a point where you could be grateful during the crazy situation that was going on?
Oh, it's automatic. I'm just automatically grateful for everything. So, yes, it's like anything, isn't it? If you practice it for long enough, you develop the muscles for it, and it's just my default now. Yeah. Whatever happens in my life, I'm grateful for it, you know, good, bad and the ugly. Because, I mean, as Tony Robbins says, your life happens for you, not to you, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, that's what I was expecting the answer to be. I just wanted the audience to hear it for themselves. Because it's a hard thing to imagine when you've not been there, because you sort of think, well, nothing bad enough could have happened. Do you know what I mean? For you to, it's like, wait one day till you find it. But then when they hear a story like yours, where you have gone through many things and then something that everyone can resonate with. And it's that lockdown. It's like you was already in that place for years. So when something really chaotic came externally, you was able to bring yourself straight back to gratitude.
Oh, yeah.
So you're not knocked off balance. Like you said, it keeps you strong. It keeps you productive.
Yeah.
You know, and I imagine even your children benefited from you, not because they'll be worried about their parents, as most people are, like you said, because you're over that bracket. Everyone at the beginning who's younger, some were fortunate enough to have parents, but then they were stressed out, like, oh, what about my parents? They're over the bracket, you know. I was imagine your children weren't. They knew.
No, they're pretty good. Yeah, they're all pretty chilled. Yeah. Because we just, I've got four grandchildren, and they're all home educated. So, you know, they just carried on as before. You know, all the systems were set up, and we just make the best of things.
Have you noticed? Because it made me think earlier when you were saying it with like. In school, had they have taught certain things I know now, it would have really sped up my process of life and less suffering, but it wasn't taught. And it's like even gratitude, there was no gratitude class. It didn't come up in any aspect of class in any way, even slightly, you know? So making you just have that appreciation. Do you get to share that area of your life with your grandchildren yet?
Are they older? As much as I can, And I help them with their breathing as well. Even if you just sit with someone and you consciously breathe, they'll normally mirror you subconsciously. So I don't even say anything sometimes. I just sit with them, you know, and keep them company, and I just breathe. And I think, have you heard of Ho'oponopono? The gratitude prayer. It's in Hawaiian.
Oh, I have heard of the gratitude prayer, but I don't know off by heart. I didn't know the name of it, but I have heard when people have said the Hawaiian
prayer. You say, because everything around us, we're manifesting, we're responsible for everything around us to a certain degree, And if the Ho'oponopono is, I'm sorry, please forgive me, I'm so grateful, thank you. No, got this wrong. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. Thank you. I love you. And you just breathe. You don't have to say it out loud. You just think it. Sit next to someone and you breathe it in and then you breathe it out. You know, you breathe in all the positive gratitude thoughts, and breathe out all the negative. Just sit next to someone and do that. You don't have to say anything. It makes such a difference.
Yeah, like I've noticed, I remember seeing something years ago on how people subconsciously mimic postures, especially when the longer they know someone. So if you stand with your arms folded, you'll notice, and if you're with a couple of people, that suddenly everyone's standing the same. Or if one person puts their hand there without realizing you're copying each other, but especially in like relationships. I know it's me and Danielle, she could be sitting away and I go, wait, when did I end up sitting just the same way as you? It just like happened without you realizing. And so the breathing, like I said, sometimes if someone's stressed out and you're just being calm, you're breathing and your intention is set in a calm place, like you said, they just start to naturally calm down as well.
If you work with horses, horses mirror you so quickly. I don't know whether you've come across that.
I shocked my friend because I stayed on her bit of land where she rescues horses, rehabilitates them, and then tries to find them homes. But she has a couple that are permanent residents where they've been through too much, or they're too ill that like it's not worth rehoming them and shocking them in the system. But occasionally some come in that, you know, it's get them a bit healthier and then find them a nice home and they get a new life. But I was with, she had four horses in the garden, and I was doing my morning breathing routine and movement, because if I start my day with breath and lubricating my spine and opening my energy system and just like being at peace. And I was out there doing that, and I got a really nice little video of it. I try never to use technology when I'm doing it, because that's like a distraction and a vibration in itself. But because it was the horses there, I thought, this would just be a nice memory for myself to have. And it was really interesting because one of the horses came over and was like, come right to me, and like put his head down on me and then laid next to me. And then the other one in the back laid down and they all just relaxed. And she's like, that horse won't go near a person. She goes, I can't believe it came up to you and actually like gave you a kiss and then laid down. She goes, that's like incredible. She goes, because it's been tortured by people for most of its life. And she doesn't normally even have people come near it because it's too scared, and it's even sometimes scared of her. She goes, she's like the only one it really lets near it. So that was really fascinating for me. And then I was like going out there more every day and just putting my hand on its head and just feeling the sense it was giving off and the calmness, but trying to also put myself in that place, you know, of complete calmness. They said, I always think of harmony to me is symmetry. So it's like balance. It's like you're just trying to make something more beautiful.
Yeah.
It's just getting yourself into that state of a beautiful harmonic state.
Yeah, but it just shows you the power of the vibrations that you're producing there, doesn't it? That little horse picked up on it.
Yeah, but no, that was really nice to be there and to do some work with the horses and to learn. And I also learned as well to watch your own feet when you're working with horses because they're heavy. I got one tread on my foot. Luckily, my foot survived. It was right at the beginning. I was standing there and I was just putting my hand on its neck and it took one step sideways and trod straight on my foot. And I quickly learned, right, pay more attention to my own feet.
Absolutely. I had my foot broken with a horse treading on it. And yes, I was booked to go on holiday in the afternoon, booked from Heathrow to fly out to Corfu. So I just bound it up and kept going. But 30 years later, my foot was completely deformed and I had to have an operation on it. So, yes, watch your feet.
Nice. Well, we're coming near to the end of the show. I have a few just fun, short one-answer questions that if you have time for that. But is there anything we didn't cover, didn't talk about that you felt you wanted to or needed to share?
No, I don't think so. I always go with the flow. Ask me anything you like.
And just lastly, where did you say just one more time where people can get your gratitude course? No, you said it was free as well.
Yeah, it's gratitude.place, it's called. That's the website, thegratitude.place. And if you go to the courses page, I sent you a link actually, if you want to put the link in the or description.
Yeah, I'll put it in the description as well.
But if you go to the courses page, you'll see the Gratitude Attitude Treasure Hunt. And it's available for free at the moment, just for a short time.
Nice. And is there any other, do you use social media a lot yourself? Is there a place people can follow your content?
Facebook and Instagram. It's all the gratitude.place. I think Facebook is the Gratitude Place page.
Nice. I'll put them all in the description.
Yeah.
Following, like we said earlier about what we consume, I always encourage the audience, if they're looking for information, like someone like you that's talking about gratitude, or like you said, being through a life of experience and still able to find gratitude and put that into your life and connect and share with others, that just having that as a form of input in your life when you're on social media, that more of your content is that direction rather than stuff that shrinks you and makes you feel no good. You might as well have some content that feels good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. And if you had to choose one, these are the quick questions. If you had to choose one, a cat or a dog?
Oh, that is impossible. I like both. I mean, I've got the most beautiful little cat at the moment, but I think heart of hearts, I'm a dog person.
Yeah. No, it's always interesting for me because everyone, when you get them down to it, they don't want to answer. They always are.
I've covered my cat's ears while I said
I can see right now, I can see a dog and a cat, but I love them both. But I'm a dog person. Danielle's a cat person.
Yeah.
So it works for us, but I love them both, all of them so much. What's your favourite colour?
Turquoise, kingfisher blue.
Nice.
Yes.
What sound or noise do you love?
What sound? Water moving, movement of water. All different. I love waves crashing. Like little tiny brooks bubbling, any sort of water movement.
Nice. And what sound or noise do you not love so much?
What sound I don't like? Oh, children crying, I should think. You know, people being distressed. Oh, the sound of people being distressed is awful, yeah.
What do you love about yourself?
Myself? I love my resilience. And my adaptability and my resourcefulness.
Nice. And what do you love to see in other people?
What do I like to see? Oh, kindness. Kindness every time.
Nice. And last question.
That covers everything. Sorry. Yeah.
And the last question is, what do you love to see? Not what do you love to see? What do you love about animals? And this can be pets or animals in nature, or just animals in general.
I love that honesty. I mean, I think if any animal I really identify with, it's a horse. Because however tame they are, they're always wild inside, you know, there's always a wild creature inside them. And they're so honest. They've got no mechanisms to be anything other than they are.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. I've not had someone answer that honesty, and it really resonates because, yeah, you don't come across any animal and go, oh, that's fake. They're not being themselves.
Yeah.
No, they're not being true to how they feel. It's like, no, they're giving you 100% how they are in that moment.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's been beautiful to get to know you in more detail.
And you.
Hear so more on your story.
Talk to you.
Yeah. So I'm wishing you all the best with continuing to shine your light and aid people with their gratitude growth and just enjoying your life yourself.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you so much.
No, thank you so much for being on the show, and we'll catch up another time.
Yeah, take care.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
I truly appreciate you for listening to the very end. So if you did, hit the like button, subscribe for more content just like this, and check out patreon.com/Luke Greenheart on how you can support this broadcast, this mission, and my content creation. I am creating compassionate content to share, to love, and to shine. So come check it out.